Appreciated that message of praise, that song of praise. You know, that's one of the elements of prayer. Often we think about intercession, think about praying for people, but one of the elements of prayer is worship and praise to God. And I enjoyed that lesson there. I greet you all in the name of Christ. I want Him to be glorified this morning. And I'd like to welcome all of you here, the visitors. My desire is that you can worship God with us, that you can be blessed. And most of all of us can find something here that will be a benefit and a blessing in your life, especially in the area of service to God. Psalms 91, verse 1 says, "He that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty." The secret place of the Most High. This morning, I'd like to center our minds around one word. The title of my message, actually, is the word solitude. As I reflect and I meditate on the issues, the problems that face man, the needs of our own congregation, our church, I guess I can't help but face the fact that there's overwhelming odds against us as humans. The fact that we are severely lacking in wisdom and time to meet all the needs that come up in a group of people in the experience of humanity. And I'm also reminded of the truth, sometimes not often enough, that it is far better to arm a man with the tools required to remedy his situation, his problems, than it is to fix and repair all of that man's problems for him. And this morning I want to bring you this message of solitude, this thought of solitude, as a tool, a very necessary tool that you can use in your life, a tool that, if put to use, is capable of helping you do things that maybe you've depended on other people to do for a long time in your life. The decisions that you need to make, wisdom that you need for life, freedom from temptation and evil, hearing God's voice, I'll come in the solitude place, the secret place of the Most High. I'd like to look at the example of Jesus, first of all, in Mark chapter 1. If you'd care to turn there, I think you could be blessed. And I just want to do a little bit of an overview and just read a few of the verses. This is the Gospel of Mark, as was mentioned. The Gospel of Mark is a very compact book. It's very brief. There's a lot that happens in a few verses and a few words. This is all the beginning of the Gospel of Jesus, the Son of God. His birth and well into His ministry are covered in this first chapter. I don't know exactly where the days begin and end, but I do want to start in verse 32, where it says that evening was coming. And verse 32 says, "And at even, when the sun did set, they brought into him all that were diseased, and them that were possessed with devils. And all the city was gathered together at the door. And he healed many that were sick of divers diseases, and cast out many devils, and suffered not the devils to speak, because they knew him. And in the morning, rising up a great while before day, he went out and departed in a solitary place, and there prayed." We see here in this first chapter of Mark, if we were to back up and look at what that day of Christ consisted of, the needs were tremendous and the needs were unending. Earlier in the chapter, we see that a demon was cast out. Peter's mother-in-law was healed. And as the fame of Jesus and his teaching, his ability to work miracles on the behalf of humans, as that fame went out, you can imagine And you can see the reason why so many people were attracted to this man, this prophet that they called Jesus. And you can see how the workload increased as the word got out. And as the sun was setting that day, he wasn't able to go home and relax like a lot of us would after a busy day. But things got busier for him. It says that all the city was gathered at the door. And as he gazed upon the masses and all the needs that were in front of him that evening, after that busy day, as he could see plainly the power of sin, the bondage of Satan, the bondage that Satan had them in, bound with, I believe it is notable, it is heartwarming to me to see the response Jesus had to this great responsibility and how his response was in many ways perhaps opposite of what our response is after a day like this. How that instead of sleeping in the next day after a long night, a long evening of work, he got up early, a long ways before the sun came up, and he went out into the solitary place to spend time with his Heavenly Father. And I just think it should speak to us that if Jesus found the need for solitude, then how much more should you and I follow this example in our own lives? Example of the way he left for us to cope and to survive in a world that seems to be increasingly going insane, increasingly losing their mind. You know, we're never going to catch up with all the needs. There's never going to get a time when we're all caught up, when everyone we face has no problems left in life. We'll probably not even reach that plateau in our own life. But God has designed a way that you and I can cope with it. And Jesus left this example for us. I'd like to just read at least one verse from each of the Gospels. I thought that would be a good exercise for us. Beginning in Matthew, one verse from each Gospel, this example Jesus left for us. And if I am correct, these are each different occasions. I was going to double check that and I didn't. But I believe these are all separate occasions here in the life of Jesus. Matthew chapter 14, first of all. Matthew chapter 14, verse 23. And without reading all the background, these are days that were filled with busyness. These were days that were filled with service. These were exhausting days. These were days that were draining in the life of Christ. Verse 23 of Matthew chapter 14, and when he had sent the multitude away, he went up into a mountain apart to pray. And when the evening was come, he was there alone. And then in Mark chapter 6, we already had one example from Mark, but this is another one. Mark chapter 6, verse 31. And this is Jesus. I believe the same principle applies, but he's inviting his disciples, he's inviting his closest followers to follow him into the solitude. And he said unto them, Come ye yourselves apart into a desert place and rest a while, for there were many coming and goings, and they had no leisure so much as to eat. And Luke chapter 4. Luke chapter 4, verse 42. And it was day, and when it was day, he departed and went into a desert place. And the people sought him, and came unto him, and stayed him, that he should not depart from them. That word desert, incidentally, there's only a couple, maybe one place in the New Testament where the word solitary is found. But the Greek root is that same, it can be wilderness or desert. So there, Jesus went into a solitary place, into the desert place. And then the last one, John chapter 8, verse 1. And I find this one very interesting. If you back up one verse into chapter 7, the last verse, verse 57, and like I was pointing out to you before, these are days that are filled with activity. These are difficult days. If we were to read some of these were days filled with mental discussion and mental verbal attack by the enemies of Jesus. But it says at the end of that chapter, and every man went unto his own house, and the first verse in chapter 8, verse 1, Jesus went into the Mount of Olives. The connotation there, the next verse says, and early in the morning he came again into the temple. The connotation there is plain, that he spent a night of solitude alone. Why did Jesus do that? Well, he left us the example. When we talk about solitude, I think it should be clear to us, but I just want to emphasize that this morning we're not discussing what the world calls vacation time. Solitude is not spending breathtaking amounts of money in an effort to calm the nerves and to relieve stress. The solitude here is not a night at the coast. It's not even necessarily a walk with your wife or time alone with certain friends. Although those things are relief from the daily pressures and good for us, what I want to do is try to take us one level beyond that, one level closer to what Jesus was trying to teach us. Where it is solitude, it is a time alone. It could be just a few minutes. I want to make that plain. It doesn't have to cost a lot of money. It can be 15 minutes in the middle of the night when you can't sleep. It can be a few minutes between the time when the wash is finished and the children get home from school. But somewhere along the line, solitude is you getting alone with God. Solitude is a time of reflection and listening to the voice of God. Solitude is a time of reflection. It is a time for the soul to be maintained. It is a necessity for your soul's prosperity to find that time of solitude. Why then do we need solitude? Jesus left us this example of solitude. Why is it that we need solitude? Why is it so? I'm impressed with the fact that this fact is so unimpressed upon our mind at times. It is amazing to me. And that is why I want to leave this with you. I think it's such a very elementary part of our spiritual life. The importance this is. Why do we need solitude? First of all, we need solitude. I believe it's one of the major reasons Jesus set apart a time of solitude with his heavenly Father. Solitude is a source of power from God to deal with man and man's problems. Solitude is the source of power from God to deal with man and man's problems. These could be your problems. These could be your temptations. These could be your weaknesses. These could be the besetting sins in your life that we're talking about. Or these could be the issues, the people you're serving, the people you're working with, the problems that you face in your family or your church or the committee you're on. Solitude is the source of power. You know, we live in a world, like I said before, where getting away from it all is heavily emphasized. You can't hardly look up a country just out of sheer interest of what that country is like, I found out. You look up Ecuador, you look up Belize, you look up any of those countries, and somehow they're going to be sending little advertisements about the paradise of these countries, about how you can buy a lot and you can get away from everything in America. That's not what solitude is talking about in the Bible. And all the while, it's interesting that it is becoming increasingly difficult to actually get away from it all. We're connected. We have gadgets, we have money, we have the din of electronics and music, the entertainment, and we subject ourselves to it, the social life. It all comes together in this unique blend of noise that numbs the mind and actually quenches the Holy Spirit speaking to us. And it's getting worse and worse. The devil is a master. He knows how important this tool could be and needs to be, how important it is that you set time apart for yourself and with God. When the electronics are off limits, when the magazines are out of reach, When sleepiness isn't a part of the equation, when it's not necessarily that there's nothing else you could be doing, but it is a purposeful time to spend with your Lord. And Satan knows how important that is. And we have accommodated him far too many times in the hustle and bustle of life. In the rhythm of this ceaseless activity and noise has become the enemy to this solitude. When Jesus found solitude, it was a time to pray. It was a time to be strengthened by His Heavenly Father. Solitude was not, solitude was not driven out of a repulsion for people. Jesus had a love for people, and I have to admit to you this morning that some of the times I'm tempted with solitude based on those reasons. And we face that as humans, that we are tired of humanity. But I want to emphasize to you that solitude is not driven, it is not motivated out of a repulsion for people, a repulsion for problems, a repulsion for certain personalities. Rather, it is a place to find the source of strength to help these people, to help with these relationships that are so difficult for us. This is what led Jesus time and time again to solitude. We have in this chapter, I didn't read it, Mark chapter 1, I'm basing a lot of my, this is central part here of the message. But Mark chapter 1, at least three times this Greek word solitude comes out. I'm just going to mostly point out one other one. But in verse 12, it says that immediately the Spirit of God driveth him into the wilderness. That is the beginning of the temptations of Christ. And the Bible is teaching us here that Jesus was driven by the Holy Spirit into the solitary place. Into the solitary place to face that spiritual battle. And the Bible tells us in one of the other Gospels, it's not here in this Gospel, I think it's in Luke chapter 4, that when Jesus came back from that solitary place, He came back in the Spirit, in the power of the Spirit. And there He faced and began His ministry in the power of the Spirit, having come out of that solitude. Therein lies a very important message for us, dear friends, brothers and sisters, struggling teenager, whatever your case may be. The solitary place is a place where you can gain victory in the spiritual warfares of your life. And you can become sculptured in your soul to better face the challenges of life. This is what Jesus did here. You know, being in solitude is more than being a monk. It is not asceticism. Peter faced that problem when they were up on the mountain. I think that is an interesting story to me. We've all faced this when we've had such a blessed time, Peter was up the Mount Transfiguration, alone with a very elite group of people, very spiritual men. You could say, whatever it is, a wonderful service, a time of very spiritual reflection with friends that think like you do. Bible school after 3 weeks. And Peter said, I think it would be a good idea if we just built 3 tabernacles up here and we just stayed here up on this mountain. But Jesus said, look, we got to go down to these people. And if you can just in your mind imagine the transition, the abrupt switch from that time up there on the mountain to the dusty streets, to the rabble-rousing crowd below. And the first thing they meet is a man that says, Lord, my son has a deep spiritual need. He's got a demon that's doing terrible things to him. And the Lord freed that young man from that demon, that lunatic that was sore vexed. I find it a challenge later on in this chapter, Mark chapter 1, for my own life, how when Jesus was still in verse 41, after that busy day, after that late evening and night of work, after that night of very little sleep, of getting up early, and how the mind begins to cloud over. The mind begins to blur with that much activity and that little sleep. And to me, it's a testimony. The miraculous nature of this solitude. How in verse 41, Jesus still responded with compassion in his heart. And what a blessed thing that is. What a testimony of the power that can come through solitude in the life of Jesus. Solitude, a time of solitude. Solitude is a time to take inventory. Solitude is a time to take inventory and to have God deal with us. Solitude is where God sculptures the soul. Solitude is the place where God works on us and works us over and overhauls us in the areas that we need it. You know, we often as humans, we talk about life-changing events, of tragedies, of accidents, of situations beyond our control that entered our lives and forever changed our outlook and the way we viewed things. But solitude does all that and more. You don't need to have a near-death experience. You don't have to be in a bad accident. You don't have to have a loved one die to have what solitude will give to you. Solitude, a time alone with God, will do as much and often more to forever change the way you view life. And I know this is real for my own life. Some of the most life-changing events in my life happened in a few moments on my knees, alone. And solitude is that way. It can change the way you view life. It can prepare you for service. It can, in a few moments, alter the way you think about things. It can, in a few moments, adjust the attitude you had or have, the struggles you have with another brother or sister. It can prepare you for eternity in ways that no other experience is able to do with you. You know, many people, my wife has pointed out different times that one of the, I guess it's a weakness of the Zaire makeup, is we tend to be restless, angst ridden. I think in less complimentary terms, it's just simply a discontentment with life. And many people circle the globe looking for an experience, looking for something, somewhere in life, to bring clarity, to bring purpose, to bring a mission. And they fail to see that if we would be still and know that God is God, and we would do that on a regular basis, that God could form in us and sculpture in us that form and likeness of Christ that is His desire to do in the beginning. But solitude, that is what I want to point out to you. Solitude is a way of taking inventory of your life. Solitude is an opportunity for God to work on your life. And I'm reminded of that blessed story in Genesis chapter 32. The story of Jacob, that schemer, that deceiver Jacob. How that in Jacob's life there, the story, Genesis chapter 32, that story there of Jacob. The night that Jacob wrestled with God, and God dealt, and the way God dealt with Jacob that night. I'm just impressed with that story. It's such a blessing to me. That story has, from the beginning, my awareness of my spiritual life. When I began to take God seriously, this story was deeply and indelibly impressed in my mind, some of these verses that were brought to me that night came from this chapter. As God spoke to me and God worked with me and God sculptured me in the solitude. I think that's one of the reasons this story is so precious to me, how God brought some of these verses to me. But many times Jacob had been a dishonest person in his life about who he was and what he was. It was the way he lived life. It was the way he had dealt with life. It is the way he had become wealthy in this life. It is the way he navigated life. It is the way he went from one thing to the other in life. It was how he depended on his ability to present himself as something other than he was in order to get along in life. But there in that dead of night, with his enemy brother in front of him and the pursuing God behind him, he faced God honestly with who he was. And God came to him this night and said, "Jacob, who are you?" And that name Jacob, that man that had lived with that name all those years, faced God straight on. In fact, he said there in the solitude, "I will not let go of you until I get to the bottom of this." The name Jacob means deceiver or supplanter. And God said, "I want you to tell me once and for all, you told your father way back then, when this all got started, when you started this road of running and pretending, that all started when you told your father way back then. You remember that, Jacob? You said you were somebody that you weren't." And Jacob confessed that night who he really was. He said, "I'm Jacob." And God told him, "Blessed are you. As a prince, you will have power with God and man." And it's such a beautiful thing how he went out. When the sun came up that morning, it was shining on a different Jacob. It was shining on a different man. He was never the same. It was an opportunity for God to do inventory on his life, to shape his soul in a way that would bring blessing to generations beyond that. It was a beautiful thing to allow God in the solitude to work you over. You know, the temptation is to never allow ourselves to be caught alone with God. We talk to other people about our problems. But we have so many ways to do that. We can do that on Facebook. We can do that on text. We can do that by telephone. We can do that at the sewing circle. And although it's a blessed thing to be able to do that with your wife, we can do that a lot. But we can be sure, we can make sure that we're never caught alone with God. And we never allow ourselves to be in the position where God can work us over and God can speak to us. The self-help, the inspirational motivators always have an answer. And replacing in our life what we desperately need God to do. And sinner, this morning, if you're going to be convicted of your sin, if you have any kind of desire in your heart to ever get right with God, if you have any kind of inkling in your heart to overcome those besetting sins, you're going to allow yourself to get caught between the devil and God, and allow him to work you over and to make adjustments in your soul. You're going to have to allow yourself to be alone without the props, without the music, without the movies, without the books. You're going to have to allow yourself to be caught in a serious moment of your life, not surrounded by your friends, not with your stereo on. You're going to have to allow God to speak, the Holy Spirit to convict you deeply of the sin that is in your life. Allow God to shape your soul through the solitude. It's a powerful tool that God is giving you if you will use it. Solitude allows us to hear the still small voice. That's the point I want to bring to you. Solitude allows us to hear the still small voice. 1 Kings chapter 19. There's another beautiful and precious and blessed story there of that prophet Elijah. I'm not going to turn to that, but But I'm going to try to go through this story by memory. You know what it was like? Ahab, he was married to Jezebel. Jezebel was a wicked woman. She had a god by the name of Baal. She had 400 prophets at least that were very loyal to this wicked god. Elijah comes along and said, "Let's make a contest. Let's see who the real God is." God answered by fire, burnt up that altar for Elijah. And Jezebel looked at him and said, "You know what? If I have anything to do with it." And she made a vow that by this time tomorrow, you're going to be one dead man. You know, Elijah did some things that probably were a show of his weakness. I suppose he succumbed to fear. I suppose there was a little bit of faithlessness involved in his life. But I know for certain that there was at least one thing he did right during that very difficult period in his life. The Bible tells us in 1 Kings chapter 19 that he went one day's journey into the solitude. And there, in his discouragement, he dealt with God. The Bible tells it was in the wilderness. It was the same thing as the solitude. There he met with God, one day's journey from the hubbub, from the noise. You would do that for a hunting trip. You would do that if it was a family reunion. You would take time off to do that. But would you do that for God to speak to your heart? That is the power of the solitude, as he was there. And he didn't spend a lot of time under that juniper tree. The angel came and fed him. He ended up on the Mount Horeb, I believe it was, in a cave. And God came to him and said, "Look here, I want you to step outside here." And God sent the wind. I have never personally experienced a wind like the Bible describes there, that it tore the rocks. But it says that God was not speaking through that wind. The fire, the earthquake came, shook that mountain. And the Bible tells us that God was not speaking in that earthquake. And then the fire came. And the Bible tells us that God was not speaking in that fire. But God said, I want you to step out here outside of that cave. He stepped out of that cave with a mantle wrapped around him. And he listened. And God came to him in a very still, small voice. You know, the fact of the matter is, God is looking for the opportunity to speak to us. And many people look for God to speak when the big thing comes, when the fire comes, when the earthquake comes. And often we say, "I wonder what God is trying to say to us through this terrible tragedy." I wonder what God is trying to say because of 5 days in the hospital. Well, I believe God's maybe trying to say something. Maybe he's just trying to say, "Don't stand on the swamp buggy that way." That may be all the more it is. Maybe God's just saying, you know, when things get hot, they burn down. But you know, I know good and well that if we can't hear God in the solitude, in the little things of life, in the small areas of fashion, in the small areas, in the simple things, you know, that's the reason revival doesn't come. When God cannot speak to us in the little things in life, he can't lead us to the big things in life. We're frustrated because we can't find the one we always wanted to marry. We're frustrated perhaps because life isn't going the way we wanted it to in our jobs. But have you met God in the solitary place and listened to the still small voice for the obvious things that he wants to speak to you? And then later in that chapter, in that difficult time, it was so very difficult time for Elijah. God spoke to him, said, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" Elijah talked to him, and plans were made. God showed a way through that difficult time in his life. But it is a challenge to me in the life of Christ. I want to show you from Luke chapter 6. It's a very similar experience Christ had. I want you to remember there is a still small voice that solitude gives to us. Luke chapter 6, verse 11. And they were filled with madness and communed one with another what they might do to Jesus. And it came to pass in those days, I just read what those days were like. It was a day of madness. It was a day when people were filled with madness, contemplating and plotting on how they could kill Jesus and silence him. And the Bible tells us that it came to pass in those days that he went out into a mountain to pray and continued all night in prayer to his Lord, to God. In those days of madness, days when they were already plotting to silence him, and earlier in that chapter we see that they were challenging him, they were angry with him because of what he did on the Sabbath day. But Jesus felt the need for solitude, much like Elijah did. And what I want to point out to you is so beautiful in that chapter, if we keep reading. When he got up the next morning, and when it was day, he called unto him his disciples, and of them chose 12 apostles. Have you ever contemplated the impact of that decision? How Jesus, I get the impression there, I think what that's saying is Jesus had a lot of disciples. When we say disciples, we often think of the 12 disciples and no more, no less. There was 12 of them, right? I believe there was lots of disciples. Jesus had lots of disciples. There was 12 that were especially close to him and were especially devoted to following him while he was here. But out of all his disciples, he chose these 12 here to be his apostles. Have you ever considered the impact that decision has made on the world? And what I'd like to point out to you is that in the time of stress, in these difficult times, when life had Jesus by the throat, we could say, it was the solitude that enabled him and empowered him to make this life-changing decision. You know, I could take you to a few special places in my experience. Little places in the woods, little places along the creek, where I can still in my mind go back and mark them as places where in the solitude I made decisions that I have never regretted. Very difficult but life-altering decisions. Decisions that had they gone the other way, I really can't tell you where my life would be. But it is there in the solitude where you hear the still, small voice of God. It's a powerful thing. You know, we look for the preachers. We begrudge them sometimes for what they do say to us. Sometimes we depend on them too much for saying things to us. I'm wanting to try to get you to see that it is in the solitude. It is not the wisdom of man. It is not the wisdom of years of experience. It is not the wisdom of your upbringing and your culture that's going to get you through. It's not the fact that your grandpa did it a certain way that is going to base your decisions on the right footing. But it is the still small voice of God in the solitude, current for today's problem, today's need in your life, that will make sure that the decisions you make are a blessing to you, salvation to your soul, and enabling you for service in God's kingdom. That's what you need, is in the solitude. The worst thing that can happen to us is when God becomes mechanical. A clock, an alarm clock in the sky, the rhythms of life go on and on. We make decisions based on our instinct and our culture and our reaction. Just one after another through the day, so many of them. But how desperate we need the solitude place. The still small voice of God to listen to. And I just think it was a beautiful opening this morning where Brother Scott read from Psalms chapter 95. And I just want to give you one word of warning here. That when you do hear the still small voice of God, if indeed you have heard the voice of God in the solitude, harden not your heart, as in the provocation. You know, 40 years God was grieved with those people. That's a long time to be grieved with the people. But harden not your heart. And listen and do what God is asking you to do. Make the adjustments. Enact. Act and react with the wisdom that God provides you with during those times of solitude. I just want to, in closing, turn to Psalms 23. It is such a very familiar psalm, a beautiful psalm. And I believe this psalm is speaking of solitude. Of a time with you and your God, you and your provider, you and the giver of all wisdom. A place where you need to be, you must be, so that goodness and mercy will follow you all the days of your life. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. And so, my friends, my brothers and sisters, all of you here this morning, let's just remember that it is not the flush and the excitement of a future that is yet to be lived that keeps us going. It is not the pursuit of wealth. It is not the status of this life in the eyes of our friends. It is not the froth of the water beaten into waves through all our activity. It is not the largeness of a group and the ceaseless, unending, planned hours of activity that our strength comes from. But it is beside the still waters. And I just want to encourage you to take some time to let those waters calm down, to still, and to hear that God is God, and to hear His still small voice. God bless you. Let's have a closing song.